Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. My name is Mimi Burris, and we are talking about Quake at the Lake, last night's episode of Dynamite. An uneven show, but a world championship match and a great opener, and we're going to get into everything in between as well. So without further ado, let's get right into it right after this.
A little sweet on Christian Cage, if you know what I mean.
The AEW Women's Champion, Thunder Rosa.
Nobody is on my level.
The TBS Champion.
Nobody better in the world. Kazuchika Okada.
I want you to fire me. You
All right, thank you everybody for listening to this show today. I'm always grateful to be able to talk about Dynamite with you guys. So we're going to get right into it after I quickly plug Patreon. It is $1 a month for all of these shows ad-free. You can also subscribe on iTunes as well to get all these shows ad-free and some exclusive content. So what are you doing if you're not subscribed already? Get on it. And yeah, let's get into the show. Which started with the coffin match, Brody King versus Darby Allin, and Brody King's entrance, you guys. Just the mask, the music. I think the lights going out, it seems, I don't know if Brody King takes 5 years to get into the ring, but it's a little bit long. I know this time was a little bit different because of the Darby Allin thing. But yeah, that's the only thing I complain about there. But it's a little bit of a long darkness there. But yeah, I mean, the face paint, everything, it looks so good with the blood later on, too. And yeah, we had Darby Allin ambushing Brody King right out of the bell. Darby Allin cracked Brody King over the back with a skateboard lined with thumbtacks. He busted Brody open wide open by scraping Brody King's face with the thumbtack skateboard thing. Brody King going outside of the ring. Darby Allin came out to try to keep attacking him, but he hurled him over the timekeeper's area, and he went face first, neck first into the barricade. It looked brutal. Darby Allin came back, hit an avalanche code red on Brody King off the top rope, obviously. And then Darby Allin trying to get Brody King in the coffin, but Brody King hits Darby Allin with a straight shot, this chop that made my insides curl up into a little ball and run home. I don't know why I said that, but it came out of my mouth, so we're going to keep going. Darby Allin goes into the guardrail a couple more times. And then Brody King goes to jump off the second rope on Darby Allin through a table, but Darby Allin gets out of the way. He goes through the table, and I should say throughout this entire time, Brody King is just bleeding. Like, when he got up from the table, there was just a pile of blood on the floor. And you know what? It's time, guys. Brody King made my best bleeders club. Really, really. I don't know if he just scraped himself up a crap ton from the thumbtacks, but that guy was gushing blood. He's up there now with the bunny and others. So, yeah. All right. So we had Brody King, like I said, crashing through the table. And then right as Darby Allin started to get the momentum, the lights went out. The House of Black returned. We had Buddy Matthews return and Malachi Black. Darby Allin ran the ropes, but Julia Hart popped up also from behind the apron and tripped him up. And he was going for the suicide dive, but yeah, Julia Hart tripped him up. And we had Buddy Matthews and Malachi Black just attacking Darby Allin until, and everybody's like, where's Sting? Where's Sting? They put him through a table with Brody King doing a diving cannonball. That looked like a terrible bump to take. Darby Allin took so many crazy bumps in this match, but Buddy Matthews goes to open the coffin, and who's inside it other than Sting? They must have done some trapdoor or something with this, because obviously they showed the coffin with nobody in it in the beginning, so I don't know exactly how they did this, but whatever they did, it was awesome. And Sting hit Brody King with, Sting hit Buddy and Brody King with the baseball bat a bunch of times, even the odds. He throws the baseball bat to Malachi Black, inviting him to use it, but Malachi Black drops the bat after slightly pretending he's going to swing at him, I guess, and then walks out and says, basically, we'll do this another time. Two, like, mythical creatures in a wrestling ring. It was crazy. It was awesome. Then Sting goes after Malachi Black on the ramp, and Darby Allin is back in the ring with Brody King. I don't know where Buddy Matthews and Julia Hart went in all this, but And yeah, it was a terrible, terrible sight. Broken tables everywhere, blood everywhere. Brody King goes to hit Darby Allin with like this, I forget what his finisher is called, but it's that terrible bomb, the gotcha bomb, the something. I wanted to call it the ganja bomb, but that is not what it's called. Darby Allin, however, reverses it, hits him with a bunch of stiff elbows, and then gets the chain that is Brody King's chain and basically chokes Brody King out after hitting him with it. And Brody King takes the most perfect bump into the coffin. So, yeah, I really went into all this recap for this match, because, and I'm probably not going to do it for a lot of the other matches in this show, but this had so many good spots that I didn't want to miss any, so I wanted to go through all of that. Yeah, Darby Allin bumped like a freaking, like he weighed 2 pounds this entire time. I don't even know. He bumped like a feather the entire match. Even better than a feather, because I guess if he threw a feather, it wouldn't really go far. Like a really good paper airplane is what Darby Allin bumped like, I guess. And, or just a rock, a little freaking pebble, and, went over the guardrail. That was a really awful bump. It looked like his neck broke as he flipped over it. And you know what? Nobody lost anything in this match. Brody King came out looking like a beast. Darby Allin came out looking like a strong baby face. And, like I said, that bump at the end was so perfect. So this was a great opener to Dynamite, and, really set the tone for the rest of the night, I thought. I think if this match didn't deliver as well as it did, I don't think I would be as forgiving as I feel like I am for a lot of the stuff that was on this show. So, next up, we had the tag team tornado match with the Lucha Brothers, Penta and Rey Fénix, versus La Facción Ingobernable, Andrade, El Idolo, and Rush. Obviously, Alex Abrahantes and Jose, the assistant, coming out as well. That played into the match later on, but yeah, if I tried to review this match, I think I'd give myself a headache. Or not review, excuse me, go over and recap. There were a lot of awesome moves. There was an Eddie Guerrero tribute. There was a frog splash that got reversed. Basically, towards the end of the match, they tie Penta's mask up. They tie Penta's mask up in the ropes. And it's like double knotting it, apparently. And then Rush spikes Rey Fénix with a pile driver. And Penta gets unmasked, though, to break up the pin attempt. He quickly covers his face and rolls out of the ring, or gets hit with something and rolls out of the ring. And then Rush hits Rey Fénix with the bull's horns. Andrade El Idolo nails him with the hammerlock DDT. And then they get the windfall by pin. Winfall by pinfall. Win. They get the windfall. They get the win by a pinfall. And yeah, you guys know how I feel about Rey Fénix. He's my favorite wrestler to watch. He's so incredible. Just the stuff that he can do in the ring, and the rope hopping that he did. I think he actually did it twice in this match. And some of those moves that Penta and him came up with. There was one move where he literally looked like he used Penta's shoulders as a trampoline at one point. It was incredible. And a lot of these spots are really good, but I don't know if it's Andrade who's like beefed up and that's why he just doesn't feel the same anymore. Rush doesn't seem to really be doing it for me. I don't know if it's their style, what exactly I don't like about this team, but I can't put my finger on it. And I think it is partially because of Andrade, who beefed up and he's just not the same guy he was in NXT. I mean, he had a match with Johnny Gargano that is in my top 10 favorite matches of all time, and maybe top 15, 20, but still, it was an incredible, incredible match. Think about how many wrestling matches we've ever watched, and I feel like he's just not the same. And then they do more mask stuff, how many times have we seen the mask stuff? Like, Penta needs to cut that thing off the back of his mask, or, like, they need to secure a mask, wear two masks, they need to do better, because if they're not expecting this at this point, it's their fault. It's so frustrating, I think, to go with this kind of win. I wish one team just got the win over the other without all this shenanigans. And there was a spare mask, I'll give them that. That was something, but it got taken away. So, anyways, moving on down the card, we had the Young Bucks backstage with the Dark Order and Hangman Page. Nick Jackson comes in and thanks Hangman Page for helping him last week. He said he didn't have to do that. And basically, Matt Jackson just apologizes to Page for how Matt treated him and how both of them treated him, and said that when they're around Page, Page brings out the good in them. He invited Page to join them for the Trios tournament to reform the Hung Bucks, but Page declines, saying that he's going to be in the corner of the Dark Order. And here's the problem I have with this segment. It's the Young Bucks acting. I am no actress myself, so I will never claim to be, but the Young Bucks are terrible actors. They just are. I assume Matt Jackson might be a better actor, and that's why they had him speaking, but yeah, they are just not good actors. And they're good with the facial expressions, I'll give them that. And I like how they just, you know, hate on Brandon Cutler. That was pretty good. But so that was one problem I had with this. And the other one was this whole camera stuff. Like, I get it. The hidden camera is a thing. And, like, we have to acknowledge it, and they do their best with it. But, like, they're like, Brandon Cutler, come and film this. I want everybody to see this, yada, yada, yada. Like, why can't Brandon Cutler just be, like, documenting them and that be the hidden camera thing? Like, he just is making a documentary, or I don't know. He's just documenting their every move. He films their every move because they think they're so great. I don't know exactly what you would do, but you don't need to point out the fact that he's filming you every single time. Like, Brandon, turn the camera on. Is the camera on? Brandon, is the camera on? Is the camera on? Turn the camera on. Like, it just gets a little excessive. So I don't like that. I'm pretty much sick of that, but I don't think that's going to change. So we had Luchasaurus versus Anthony Henry next, and the Workhorseman, JD Drake, obviously outside of the ring, and Jungle Boy joining commentary. He says he doesn't think he's going to be there for a while, and that was exactly that, because Luchasaurus finishes him off, terrible headbutt, and then hits him with the fossilizer. That's going to be a tough word for me to say. They better rename that finisher. And this was all just a match to set up an angle. Christian Cage is backstage, and he starts to insult Jungle Boy again, but Jungle Boy hears enough, sprints backstage to try to attack Christian Cage, but security holds him back, and then Luchasaurus basically destroys everybody and headbutts official Pat Buck, who looks really familiar. And I don't know if he was in WWE or something, but he looks really familiar to me. So just throwing that out there. Maybe somebody knows. You can tweet me on the Twitter at Mimi Burris. But yeah, I this didn't advance anything. It was kind of a waste of the time on the show. We know that Jungle Boy wants to beat up Christian Cage. I'll say this. This is a positive of this whole thing. At least Jungle Boy didn't just sit there, and there wasn't an invisible wall, and he knew where Christian Cage was, so he went over there to beat him up, because he hates the guy. Like, at least that was that. But Christian Cage has got to be so stupid. Like, how does he not expect that to happen? Does he already know the security guards are going to be there? I don't know exactly what the deal is, but I can't wait to watch Jungle Boy get his hands on Christian Cage, so they're doing something right. We had a promo from the Redeemer, Miro, talking about the House of Black, but Julia Hart shows up and basically tells Miro to embrace the darkness. Miro says that he's only allowed one woman to touch him, and his path was now clear. And I assume we're going to get the trios match there with Sting and Darby Allin, and that will be great, because I want to see more interaction with Brody King and Darby Allin. I'm not done with that. That was so awesome. What a great match. And, you know, I didn't talk about, and I guess I'm going to bring it up again now, what they did, including their first match in that, where basically we all knew that Darby Allin was so outmatched in a regular one-on-one match because Brody King was so strong and so much bigger than him and just such a monster of a man. And so what they do is they just make Darby Allin like the scrappy little baby face and make him use weapons and all that other stuff and make Brody King make a mistake. And then they have a callback to the first match, obviously, with basically Darby Allin hanging Brody King with the chain that's obviously happened before with the sleeper hold and Brody King. So yeah, I mean, really, really good stuff. I really enjoyed that. And I know I'm bringing up the first match again, but I wanted to talk about that because we had a lot of interruptions. A lot of interruptions. I don't think we had an interview without an interruption this show. Mark Henry trying to interview Powerhouse Hobbs, but QT Marshall and the Factory interrupt him. Basically, Hobbs walks off and says, "Don't let your problems become my problem." And then later, angrily after the match, he destroys the TV. I don't know, guys. This seemed silly to me, too. But I guess we're advancing the storyline with Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. I don't know if, like, Hobbs was just angry that QT Marshall and the Factory didn't get the job done. Wouldn't he want to get the job done? Maybe it was because he used the Spine Buster and that pissed him off. I'm not exactly sure, but then we had my probably least favorite segment of the show, which was Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh came out. Basically, Sanjay said that they weren't done with Wardlow. He asked anybody if they had watched Battle of the Belts. And Jay Lethal says that Wardlow, last Saturday, we sent a message, basically talks about the choke slam from Satnam Singh, or excuse me, from, yeah, Satnam Singh. Defend the championship against me one more time, or we will come and find you and just take it. Wardlow comes out and looking quite dapper in that suit. I have to say, he looked like a mountain of a man, like just a good-looking dude, Wardlow is. He said, you want another shot at this? You got it. But tonight, I'm whooping all three of your you-know-whats. And right as he's coming to the ring, and we think, you're outmatched. Maybe you could beat up three guys if there wasn't a guy who was 7'4" in the ring. But FTR, Cash Wheeler, and Dax Harwood come out to have his back. Basically, Sanjay, Jay Lethal, and Satnam retreat out of the ring. And FTR and Jay Lethal, FTR hit Jay Lethal with the big rig because Jay Lethal tries to go in the ring one more time. I don't know. He was stupid. I don't know why he did that. He went in all by himself, so that made no sense. But it was good to see the big rig. It was good to see FTR. It was nice that we did a little callback to this FTR Wardlow stuff from the Pinnacle, obviously, which was the start of the turn for FTR into babyfaces. So I really did enjoy that aspect of it. And it makes sense why these guys would be friends. But does anybody want to see Jay Lethal versus Wardlow again? Because I certainly don't. And I assume we're going to get a six-man tag maybe out of this. I don't really know. But yeah, we had Absolute Ricky Starks versus Aaron Solo next. And this was a pretty quick match, but with an incredible finishing sequence that ended with the spear from Starks to Solo. So I really did enjoy the finishing sequence, and there wasn't much to sink your teeth into other than that. And then they try to do the post-match beatdown with Nick Camarado, who gets hit with a spine buster. And that's and they try to get out of there, or they try to attack the ring, or they surround the ring, but Ricky Starks ends up running away through the crowd. And this is the problem I have with this segment, and I know it seems like I'm being really negative. I did enjoy watching this show, actually, just as a fan. I enjoyed the chaotic nature of it. I enjoyed the messiness of it. I enjoyed the whole show as a whole. I just, when we go through and pick these things apart, there's just a lot of problems with it. So it sounds like I'm being really negative, but I promise I did enjoy the show as a whole, especially with that great opener and that good main event as well. So, spoiler alert to what we're going to talk about at the main event, I guess. But, yeah, do you want the babyface to be running away? I guess he's a smart babyface because he's outnumbered. I don't know. Something to think about, I guess. But we had the quarter hour, and you know what that means. TBS title match. I don't know why I said title twice. Jade Cargill versus Madison Rain, and this wasn't good, you guys. I mean, I went into this with low expectations, and I will say that it did exceed my expectations, but that's not saying much. And then at the end of the match, obviously, we had Jade Cargill win with the jaded butt. But Athena jumps out into the ring. She decks Jade. Kira pulls Jade out of the ring to save her, and then we get a direct message from Athena that she's coming for the TBS title, holding that in the air. So maybe we'll finally get this, but this feud has really cooled down. And where the... I guess Chris Statlander's injured. I want Chris Statlander at All Out to take the title away from Jade Cargill, and I don't think I'm alone in that. So this is what we're doing, I guess, though. And you know what? It's good to see Athena back on television. They, like, debuted her, and then they really cooled down real quick. So we had more women's stuff because it's the quarter hour. Tony Schiavone interviewing Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa in the most uncomfortable... Yeah. Oh, Schiavone did say that Chris Statlander was injured. So Tony is the number one contender now for the AEW Women's Championship. And it was really just, they talk about it some other time, and just awkward, bad acting, more bad acting from the women and from everybody on AEW, I guess, tonight. We did get two good promos, I'll say, from Chris Jericho and Jon Moxley in the beginning of the show, but that's just their, you know, consummate professionals, so... And then we had our main event, which was the AEW Interim World Title Match, or AEW World Title Match, if Jon Moxley you're listening, because you are the world champion, please don't hurt me. The Blackpool Combat Club's Jon Moxley versus not just Chris Jericho, but Lionheart, the last graduate of the Heart Foundation, or Heart Dungeon, Chris Jericho. I don't even know if that's really true. I'd have to do some more research on that, but I don't think that's true. I definitely think he was trained in the Heart Dungeon partially, but I don't know if that, I don't know. Someone look it up, I guess, and I'll look it up myself. But we had William Regal on commentary for this match, and that always adds to this. So Jericho flips Moxley off as the match begins, and then Moxley flips him off as well. They lock up a couple times, and Jericho gets the better of him a few times. with some arm drags. Moxley counters the walls of Jericho, and then Jericho gets tied up with Moxley and connects with a couple elbow strikes. Jericho takes down Moxley with a snapmare and then goes for the earring and tears it out of Moxley's ear. And, of course, Moxley just had to bleed in this match. He didn't really bleed. I don't think he bled from the forehead. Maybe he did as well, but at least he was bleeding from the ear, so it was coming from somewhere else. I don't know. Call him Cody Rhodes from now on, though, guys. And then Jericho and a bloody Moxley go back and forth. Jericho counters a DDT into a backbreaker. Follows it up, with the lion salt. It's always so scary to watch. And then Moxley transitions into an armbar out of the pinfall. Jericho manages to escape, but Moxley locks in an ankle lock. Submissions back and forth. We got Jericho hitting Moxley with a flying German suplex. Hurricanrana off the turnbuckles. And then a knee against the ring post and puts him in the figure four. Later on in the match, we have, this was a long match, so I'm not going to recap all of it, but basically we have the fans chanting fight forever. Jericho charges at Moxley with the championship belt. This is after Sammy Guevara threw a bat, not well, that was a little bit of a mess, into the ring. And totally missed the ring. So Jericho had to go out of the ring and then come back into the ring, and the whole thing kind of looked contrived, but I was willing to look past it because this was a great match. But Moxley ends up applying the rear naked choke, and this time Jericho taps out. Moxley wins the match, and Jake Hager, Sammy Guevara all run to the ring to attack Moxley, but then Claudio, Wheeler Yuta, and Kingston and Ortiz come out to even the odds. I think on commentary that they said something about how the Jericho Appreciation Society, Matt Menard, Angelo Parker, Daniel Garcia come out too. They're outnumbered. I'm going to count right now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I guess they were outnumbered. I know it's real good audio to be counting on front of the microphone. But and just when we think they're outnumbered and they're going to get their butts beat up, CM Punk comes out. We hear the ch-ch-ch-ch. That's my impression of CM Punk's music. Cult of Personality plays. Huge pop for CM Punk. Big pop for CM Punk. And comes out, cleans house of the Jericho Appreciation Society. He comes and makes face to face. He comes and looks face to face with Moxley. They stare each other down in the center of the ring. And then Moxley flips off CM Punk and walks out of the ring. And we get CM Punk sitting down, crisscross applesauce, spoons in the bowl, in the middle of the ring and just soaking it all in. And good for him. He deserves to soak it all in. He was obviously hopping on the bad foot there for a minute too to really show that he's all better. I really hope he's all better. And this is clearly where we're going in the direction towards All Out. We're getting Jon Moxley versus CM Punk. And the crowd was hot for this. Not only hot for the match, but hot for the post-match of CM Punk and Jon Moxley and the anticipation towards that match. I hope they don't put their hands on each other until the match happens. Two baby faces, so we have a chance. I assume Moxley's going to take a little bit more of a heel role in all this. I'm not exactly sure where we're going to go. But the match itself, Chris Jericho versus Jon Moxley, completely over-delivered for me. Chris Jericho, for me, is not fun always to watch in the ring nowadays. I just think he's slower. I even think the Judas Effect doesn't look as good as it used to. We had Moxley kicking out of the Judas Effect at one point, and you know what? Jim Ross really ruined the near fall because he was like, no one's ever kicked out of this. This is my Jim Ross impression, apparently. I can do a little bit better. No one's ever kicked out of this. No one. I don't know if he's that Southern. No one's ever kicked out of this. No one's ever kicked out of this. And then you kind of knew Jon Moxley was going to kick out. But yeah, we did get that near fall. And if Jim Ross had shut the fuck up, it probably would have been a little bit better. But that's really aggressive. I'm sorry, you guys. I don't know why I got so aggressive about that. Yeah, but I'm excited as to where we're going next, just in AEW in general. I like this match overall. I thought we had some good developments. We had some non-developments. Stop with the backstage interruptions, for God's sake, already. And with all that being said, guys, I hope you enjoyed this week's Dynamite review show, and we will get into all of next week's Dynamite next week. I'll talk to you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.